Welcome to PCMC, pop, culture, man, children. Oh, I'm hyped. I'm hyped out of my goddamn mind. I'm here. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm your host. I'm here with Anthony Buongiorno. Anthony, how are you?
I'm doing fucking fantastic.
How are you? So fucking glad that you are.
We're excited.
Let's earn our explicit rating right now.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to the children listening.
Fucking damn it. Listen.
Let's bleep this.
Have a good day at school,
kids. Oh, my God.
But Anthony, how are you? How are you really?
I'm doing...
Let's get real. I just turned around in my chair.
I'm doing really good. I'm really excited about this subject that we're about to delve into.
This is one of these episodes where you think, how have we not done this before?
I know.
I thought we were bereft of new ideas.
Well, we're at the point where I pitched this to you and I was like, we fully could have done this.
Yeah, no, we are absolutely at the point where when we do list episodes, I have to go back and be like, did we do this or something close to this?
I have such recency bias in my memory that, like, I think everything was just, like, has just started. So, like, in my head, like, I've been on this podcast, like, 5 times.
Yeah.
When really it's more like 75 probably at this point. And I remember pitching an idea to you and you being like, not only did we do that on the podcast, you did that.
Yeah.
Like, we did this episode.
I don't remember what that
was. And I
was
like, I have absolutely no memory of that.
Yeah. Well, we did, like, didn't we do, like, we did New York's on film.
We did New York's on film.
And I know one of your choices for this kind of ties into
that. There's overlap, yeah.
So,
but no, even, yeah, it's,
no, I have to go back. I need to build an Excel because I, with everything, because I have to go back. Also, I find myself like when we do full episodes, we have, they're titled something that we've either said in the episode or some kind of joke or whatever. And I find myself when I come up with those going, have I made this? Has this been a title before? So sometimes I have to go back for that.
Yeah.
We need an intern.
We do. We should get a scrappy high schooler.
Yeah. So what we're doing today is a great idea. This is our top 10 best credit sequences, opening credit sequences in motion pictures.
Yes, yes, yes.
Not in television because that would really
be
a totally
different
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a few rules that I played by.
Interesting.
Which is I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just looking at cool openings, but truly keeping it to the credits.
I agree.
The title sequence.
I agree.
Or the opening titles.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I had a real hard time narrowing it.
Me too.
And then today when we were talking, I was like, oh, I forgot about this one and this one and this one. So I have 5 and then I have like a million honorable mentions just because I want to say that like they're also great.
Yeah, I have 5 and 5 honorable mentions.
Yeah.
And I also spent a lot of time this week moving them around from the honorable mentions to the main list back and forth.
I tried to do like what is there to talk about? If there's more to talk about, I'll put it in the main list versus the honorable mentions where I'm just like, oh, I love that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is always just an excuse to talk about things. You know, we do our top 10 lists where we will each name 5, but, you know, none of it really
by tomorrow
fucking matters.
I'll have 5.
Yeah, and there's constantly things that I forget, and I go like, oh, I never – like, me and Janine did an episode of our favorite character actors, and I'll see a movie now with a character actor like, oh, how did I not put that fucking person on the list?
I know.
So whatever. You know, we're just having fun. We're just talking. It's just – you know what I mean?
Nothing to worry about.
So, before we get into it, I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
What makes a good opening title sequence?
Well, Mike, I'm glad you asked, because I've thought a lot about this.
Thank you so much.
In prepping for this episode.
You're welcome.
It needs to set the tone for the film.
Yes.
It needs to either introduce plot, character, or setting, sometimes more than one.
Okay.
And I think it also, when done well, is a good indicator of, like, the production value as well.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, you could tell from opening credits whether this thing you're about to watch is going to be, like, a big budget, small budget,
interesting.
Medium budget.
Right. Yeah, that's
that
true.
Kind of thing. So that's – it's and it's got to hook you and get you, like, a little hype.
Yes. I found that music is a huge part of this.
For sure. And fonts.
Fonts.
Like typeface.
Yeah.
And – visuals, obviously.
Well, it creates
all working together.
It begins the visual aesthetic.
Yes.
Something we did different from this is usually we keep our list secret to give the other the opportunity to react in real time. But I think we wanted to – I don't know why we decided not to.
I said I think they're short enough so we could share them with each other and then actually – like I don't have to explain it to you if
right,
you haven't seen
right,
it.
Right, right, right. Exactly. Although I think I've there was only one that you showed me that I didn't know – I had never seen before.
Okay, interesting. You had one that I had never seen.
Okay. So yeah, I would agree with everything you've said. To me, the opening credits is like a meta text. It doesn't, some of the ones I have are like, it's not really what the movie is, but it kind of encapsulates
it's like the book cover, the book jacket.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is a fucking free podcast.
You guys should be thanking us.
When you're at a fucking dinner party next week and you pull that out like you just thought of it, fucking thank me. And Anthony. Really thank Anthony. God damn, this thing's for free. Who would like to go first?
I'll go first. I'm going to start with the one that I think I probably caught you most off guard with.
Sure.
Which is the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids opening sequence.
Which I did not remember. It like that was not in my head at all.
What'd you think of it?
Well, this is a classic animated one.
Yes.
And by the way, one that's not on either of our lists, but if you Google opening credits, which I do, but we say this, I always do. I always come up with my list and then Google, not to steal, but to be reminded of things that I forgot about.
Yeah.
But one that comes up a lot that's on none of our lists is the Pink Panther.
Yeah, I've just never seen that movie.
But what's interesting is it creates a Pink Panther cartoon character, which then became a cartoon character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in the actual Pink Panther, the Pink Panther is the name of a diamond that's the MacGuffin. Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is a good old-fashioned animated thing.
Fun.
It's fun. The kids in it don't look like the kids in the movie. So it's truly like this little meta-text of like – it's almost like a different version of it.
Yeah, and it's – I think it's – it's like, oh, this is a Disney movie.
Yes,
it's gonna
for
have
sure.
an animated opening, kind of like the Parent Trap had an animated opening too.
Yes, that's
which
true.
Which also the characters in that didn't look like the actual characters in the movie.
I mean, when you have an animated opening, it's almost like saying this is a cartoon, even if it's live action.
Right, and Honey,
like,
I Shrunk
the cartoony.
Kids is super cartoony.
Yes,
and the music is fucking great.
Yeah,
and
which is like William Tell.
Yeah, I think so.
But there's other there's a lot going on.
It's fun. It's a bunch of visual gags of like what are we about to watch? What's going to happen when these kids get shrunk?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think.
Even things that don't happen in the movie.
Yes, exactly.
Like them getting put in an envelope and being mailed.
Right.
And
exactly.
Like that.
But it does set up for you like this is what you're in for, folks.
And they did the same thing with Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. The second one also has an animated like that.
Let me tell you something. I've seen Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
What?
I've seen Honey, I Blew Up the Kid 9,000 times.
Why?
I saw it in the theater.
I saw it in the theater too, but why have you seen it so many times?
I don't know. We had it.
Young Kerry Russell.
On VHS. It was just one I found the baby very cute. I don't know.
Oh, he's adorable.
I still prefer the second one.
I think they're both great. I also really like Straight to VHS, Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
Yes.
The third.
Oof, rough.
Knock it. It's pretty good. Mila Kunis' first movie.
Yeah.
No, but I just think that it's like masterfully done.
Yes.
And that like you watch it and you're like, okay, I get the whole vibe of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a preview of what's going to happen. I get what the tone is going to be. I got some, you know, I know, like you said, it's going to be cartoony.
Yeah.
It's such high concept.
Yes.
And then you're like, okay, so it's going to be like this stuff.
Yeah, like if you didn't know what it was about, like if you hadn't seen a trailer and all you heard was the title.
Right.
It really is like, this is what this is.
Yeah.
Do you want this? Because if you're not liking this, you might as well leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's interesting is the movie's written by Brian Yuza, who did Society and did like horror and stuff. And like it was originally written as like a much more like sci-fi kind of movie.
Well, it's got those
movie.
Elements.
And it was called Teeny Weenies. And
there's definitely a porn called that.
Yeah, they Disneyfied it.
Huh. I wonder what that original screenplay read like.
God, I don't know. I don't know.
Honey, I Blew Up the Kid is a great sequel. And that kid is adorable.
Yes, yes.
And what's fun about Honey, I Blew Up the Kid is he gradually gets bigger.
Yes.
So then by the end of the movie, he's like Godzilla.
Yeah.
But he's like, still a baby. And then they make the bunny really big.
Yes. Come on.
Guys. Oh, it's so cute. And remember how they get him to stop like destroying the town by blowing up the mother. remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Why did they do that, like, the very first thing? Me poking
what
holes.
What great fucking movies. You know, it's now gone, RIP, but I did enjoy Honey, We Shrunk the Audience at Walt Disney World.
I remember that, but I forget what it was.
It was there way longer than it had any business being there.
Was it a like, show?
It was a show, and then it was a show, like a 3D show.
Yeah.
And then there was a playground.
I remember the playground with like giant leaves.
Yeah,
and shit.
And I remember going there as a kid and being like, this is fucking amazing. But then also going there in like 2010 and being like, this is still running.
Yeah. Like, there's a reference to Rick Moranis' character on Journey into Imagination.
Hank Zelensky?
Yeah, I think it's still in there.
That's great.
In Epcot. Yeah. The sophisticated, the intellectuals bark. So
I think of that every time, like, it's a horrible situation, but like President Zelensky from the Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always like, oh, it's Zelensky. Like,
yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Honey, I Shrunk Putin. So that's mine, first one.
So I guess I'll start with The Big Lebowski. So The Big Lebowski, it comes after a cold open. In a cold open, he's hit and knocked out, and then you see stars. And then you start to hear the song. It's, I think it's called The Man in Me by Bob Dylan. So you see stars, this is Big Lebowski, and then you see like, it's the point of view of pins in a bowling alley. You mm-hmm. see like the thing that comes down and leaves the pins, you see that come up. And then there's other shots that are the point of view of the ball. You see a bunch of people that are not characters in the movie, just interesting looking fat guys and people like in a bowling alley. And it's all very like, it's a lot of movement, but it's all very sort of like
slowed
down. Yeah. There's a scene where there's a guy who works at the bowling alley who's just like spraying in the rental shoes.
Yeah. Such,
one after the other.
It's real bowling culture.
Yes.
So what I love about this is I watched it a couple of times. Did you notice that they all are getting strikes?
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about it, what I like about bowling culture in general, what I like about bowling is that you can be really, really great at bowling and not be an athlete.
Yes.
And so I love that in this opening, you see people of like all different sizes getting strikes
yes.
and then like celebrating. Like at one point, the camera's on like a guy's like belly.
Yeah,
he's like big
right.
belly and he's like celebrating.
Yeah, you can kind of look like anything.
And it's kind of, but that's like the beauty of bowling too.
Yeah.
It's like the only sport where it's like,
yeah,
you could be amazing and just be like a schlub.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like it kind of captures like the ethos of bowling.
Right. There's a close up of a guy putting his hand over the cooler and like twiggling his fingers.
It's such
people
like
smoking.
It's such like an everyman sport.
Yeah. And it's such a big thing in the movie, even though it's not a movie about bowling, but it's a lot of it takes place in the bowling alley.
Yeah.
And Steve Buscemi's character hits a strike and then it goes into the movie and he always does a strike except one time and then he dies in the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
Complete side note. Actually, it's not a complete side note, but it's a diversion. There's a docuseries that was just put on HBO that no one but me has watched, and it's fucking fantastic. It's called Born to Bowl, and it follows professional bowlers.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's like these people are not making a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and they all know each other. They've got weird personalities. Some are Nepo, like they come from bowling families. Some aren't. You know, the money that they kind of need to win to make a living out of this.
Yeah.
Like some of them do have like, what do you call it? Like sponsorships, but it's not. It's fascinating. It's fast, and it's done in a very light way.
Yeah.
But you do see like what their lives are like. Do you own a cat now?
No.
Have you bought a cat? My eye is so itchy.
It's the smog.
Oh right, we should say
that's been making my eyes itchy too.
Yeah.
We're covered in smoke.
Yeah, it's fucking horrible. Yeah, my eyes hurt.
You know, there's a lot of like, cutesy like modern bowling alleys,
yeah,
but give me like an old school fucking wood paneling. Like
that guy would have fucking
I took the students at my school on a bowling trip and I went to
hey kids, look at that, that's a genuine fat guy.
No, for real, I won't name the bowling alley to protect the guilty
yeah.
parties, to protect the innocent, but we walked in there, it was like 11 a.m This thing is like frozen in 1980. It is a love relic. It. Wood paneling everywhere, vending machines with like all sorts of goodies. Fucking so many people were in there fully smoking cigarettes.
Love it.
And I was like, kids, welcome to 1990.
Like, love it.
This is the real purpose of this field trip. We've gone back in time.
I worked in a bowling alley for a little while in my early 20s, late teens or whatever. And one of my tasks when it was – oh, God, I'm going to throw up. One of my tasks when it was, like, slow was to clean, like, the ceiling. And the tar would come off like a century's worth of cigarette smoke had fucked up the ceiling to, like, it was just, like, ooey and gooey with fucking and that was already, like, it had already been past New York. It's been a while in New York that you can't smoke inside.
A long time, over 20 years.
Yeah. So, but like, at that time, it was already passed, but it was just the smoke of the past.
It's a bowling alley, baby. There's no laws. I really do love that, like, you could be a fucking bomb bowler and, like, fucking be killing it while eating cheese fries.
Like, yeah, I love that. I'd be like, on ESPN.
And you're an athlete. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking great. It's absolutely awesome.
Do you want some? Do you want allergy drops?
Sure, I would love some allergy drops. You could be a fucking drunkard, you know, and not to say that people aren't high at other shit. I mean, I know in the history of baseball, there used to be a lot of fucking drunk baseball players.
Oh, well, like, look at athletes from like the 30s and 40s. Like, I'm in better shape than those guys. Yeah.
Look at wrestlers. Like, I just watched the Hulk Hogan documentary. Mm-hmm. Which I'm not pro Hulk Hogan.
They were just big, tall, fat guys.
They were just fat dudes. Before steroids and before Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of like was like, this is what your body could look like. They were just fat dudes. They were just fat dudes.
Well, I always say that like.
They all had bellies and hairy chests.
Yeah. I'm an old-fashioned strong man.
Yeah.
Like, you should see me in like a one piece, like picking up like a dumbbell.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Being like, oh. And the ladies would be like, oh my God, he's so strong.
Yeah. Damn, I could have been a great wrestler.
Yeah, really. Back then. I was just drinking gallons of milk.
Oh God, my eyes are burning.
So, yeah. Okay, I'll go next.
Please do.
My next one is Marie Antoinette.
Who? What? Yes, this is a great one. Oh, I do think you should include the shot. Yeah, I think that's part of it.
I do include the shot. Okay. It comes mid credits. It comes right before the title card. Right. So it's the song is such a banger. It's Natural's not in it.
Yeah.
It opens with hot pink titles.
It lets you know.
It lets you know. And this like fucking banging rock song.
And it says right there, this is not like, period.
Right.
This will not be
exactly
hemmed in by period. Right. This and is like an 80s song.
Right. Or 70s even, I think. And then there's the credits break and go to Kirsten Dunst playing Marie Antoinette, like laying on a chaise lounge, being like fitted for shoes with like a crazy headdress on, surrounded by like cakes.
Right.
And then she like dips her finger in a cake and looks, sucks the icing off, then looks at the camera, directly at the camera, and like makes a face, like a raised eyebrow face.
Yes.
And then it cuts to black again, and then it says Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
The title card pops up and it's in hot pink and black. It's so fucking cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's you need something like that for this
that
movie.
Look to the camera is like this is that's where it's like this is not going to be pure period.
It's also like
this is fun.
I also think the Marie Antoinette we see in that moment
is not that.
Yeah, it's the one we see later on. It's the image of Marie Antoinette.
That's the imagine. That's the national imagination. Of what she was doing.
Even the misunderstanding of what cake meant, right? Because she said, let them eat cake, meaning let the poor. First of all, she never said let them eat cake.
She never said
but
that.
The idea of let them eat cake means not eat a delicious cake.
It was the
cake
on the bottom of the oven.
Yeah, like basically. Like yeah, like.
Breadcrumbs.
Yeah, basically. It's like let them eat crumbs. But we don't know that anymore because we're dumb. Yeah. So it's her with these decadent cakes. And then so everything looks like. We did a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
Look it up on PCMC.
Movie.
So it's like it's also rich and beautiful. That's what I loved about.
And she's in the real Versailles.
I'm gonna die on this hill. That's what I loved about fucking Wuthering Heights.
What
I loved the new Wuthering Heights.
Oh, I did too.
I loved
you saying
it.
You what what is the, what you loved about the Wuthering Heights? The style?
That kind of richness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
there's tons of that. And I feel like Marie Antoinette.
The only thing I didn't like about the new Wuthering Heights is, even having never read the book and only being – like, I'm familiar with it, obviously, but I've never read the entire thing. It still kind of feels like half a movie.
Sure.
It could have. I would have loved a wraparound with the ghost.
There is one, yes. Especially because it's so gothic. You it, might as well just add it.
Ends with her Yeah. It feels like it's yeah. But I did love it. I really liked it.
I loved
it. And the fucking the soundtrack. So good.
I fucking loved it.
But the Marie Antoinette credits, so good. They really get you hype.
Yeah. Yeah.
Real good.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I think it's necessary for a film like this.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of say right away, this is what I am. We should also say that there was a while, it's kind of fading away again, but there was a while where there were not opening credits. There was a weird time where it became fashionable to not have them.
And then just have the movie end with the title card.
Right. I feel like they're back a little bit, but certainly not the ubiquitous way that they were through a lot of film history. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, back in the day, in old movies, it's like the opening credits were like the end credits, and then it would just say the end, Paramount, at the end. And that
Right. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marie Antoinette, those are great. Just the hot pink.
Yeah, the aesthetic.
It brings to mind, like, it's anachronistic. It's aesthetically anachronistic. But, like,
fully embracing its anachronisticness.
Right.
Anachronisticity or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, love it.
So what's my next one? Oh, I'll do Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee.
I believe it or not, I had never seen this before. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, it's an excellent movie. It does something that I think is one of the hardest things a movie can do, which is register the idea that it's very hot on film. It's during a heat wave, and you feel it watching it by the vibrant colors and the languid way of the camera moves and obviously the performances of everybody. You feel the heat wave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it begins, this is very metatextual. So it begins, what do you call it? Little Rosie Perez. I think this is her first movie.
Yeah.
She's in dancer. The movie, right?
Well, no, she wasn't just a dancer. She was, in the she beginning, she's a dancer, but she's a character in the movie.
I don't think she was a dancer. Spike Lee saw her dancing like that in a club and met her and like discovered her.
Wow.
And was like, I want to put you in this movie. And I think that's her first movie. Wow. You can tell she kind of doesn't know how to act. It says
introducing Rosie Perez.
But so the opening is, so it all takes place, if you don't know, it all takes place like in this one little tiny neighborhood that's an African-American neighborhood in Brooklyn. But there's, in the center of it, there is an Italian-run pizzeria.
Yeah.
And the tension in the neighborhood because it was
like a formerly Italian neighborhood that's now becoming a
black neighborhood. Exactly. Yeah. And there's a heat wave. Mm-hmm. So like, there's this like, it's a pressure cooker.
Brings
the
tension to the surface.
Right. And it's dealing a lot with, obviously Spike Lee, this is a big thing he cares about. Like, it's dealing a lot with racism and violence, police violence against people and stuff. Mm. So the song that we hear is Fight the Power.
Well, wait, but before that you hear an instrumental of Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Which is the Black National Anthem.
Right. And then there's jazz. There's a lot of jazzy music like that in the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting when you see the 40 Acres and a Mule productions, it's Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Yes, you're right. You're right. But that kind of soundscape of hip hop and then something more jazzy is within the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hear Fight the Power by Public Enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, they talk about Elvis being a racist. Like, it's a long sequence.
Fuck, I love that fuck him and fuck John Wayne too.
Yeah, that's Flavor Flav saying that.
Yeah.
And so she's dancing. She's adorable.
At one point I was like, this is giving Cosby Show.
Yeah, yeah. She's going out and she's doing. But
she's going for it.
So one of the settings is the block, because it all takes place in like this block. They even deal with gentrification in that movie too. Like the white couple that move in.
But it looks like a stage, like a.
In that moment, it's a stage. In reality, I think it was real. I don't know if it was really shot there in Brooklyn or if it was just meant to be realistic. But, this looks like a stage on purpose.
Right. It's like this is the beginning of the show.
You're right.
The show's about to begin.
You're right. Because it's weird.
This is our setting.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's interesting lighting. And there's a couple different outfits. There's one where she's in like this cute red dress. And then there's one where she's dressed like a boxer. Mm-hmm. And she's got boxing gloves on and like a little shorts. And then there's another one where she's got on like a leotard but a leather jacket over it. Yeah. And they're just
– and we should say she's just dancing the whole time while the credits are
right.
Are
and, but it's so like – but and it really lets the song speak.
Yeah, she goes the whole time.
Yeah. And it – there's even interesting moments where like there's close-ups of her and she looks like tired or like she'll stop between one movement and the next. So it feels like like real dancing in a way. And it's just her alone. It's not – so it's so incredibly vibrant, but just coming from this one character, it's just – again, it's a perfect like meta text. It's perfectly like this feeling is something that you will feel not throughout the entire movie but moments in the movie.
Yeah.
And the song Fight the Power is used over and over and over again. It's the song that – spoiler alert for this – 30-40-year-old movie. It's the song that Riddhi Rahim is constantly playing on his boombox, and he's the character that gets killed by the cops and starts the riot. It ends with like a riot.
What was the last movie Spike Lee made?
Or
is he just she's just a full-time Knicks fan now?
Yes.
Also, yes. I'm so happy for him. He's waited his whole goddamn life for this moment.
Oh yeah. What was the last movie he made?
I feel like it's been a while.
Was it Black Klansman?
Maybe that was one after that. Was like 6 years ago, I feel like, or 7 years.
But he's not – I don't think he's the kind of guy who like does like tons of shit.
No,
he made something – oh, no. These are like little shorts. Hmm. Oh, no. He made a movie in last year called Highest to Lowest.
I didn't see that. I've never heard of that.
I never heard of it either.
I really like Crooklyn. Have you ever seen Crooklyn?
No, I haven't.
Crooklyn is very good.
Scenes of it, but not the whole thing.
It made me want to watch the movie, which is good, right? That's what
you
want.
Yes, exactly right.
So my next one is Rosemary's Baby.
Never heard of it.
I don't know what it is about this opening sequence.
This is very simple.
Really love it. I've always really loved it. We talked about New York in film. I love the way New York is used throughout the whole movie, but especially in this opening credit sequence. Again, I think it's something about like the very feminine font.
It's another pink.
Pink font overlaid over the... city.
And so very delicate, like...
hands. Yeah. Like it's in a, like a cursive.
Cursive, yeah.
While Mia Farrow, it's her voice.
Say, is it her
sings a lullaby, which is just la, 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 la.
It's very creepy.
Super creepy.
And it's also like you see the tops of buildings, which is something you don't often see. Yes. It's like looking down instead of looking up.
Yes, I was thinking that it's sort of... And they kind of look ugly from up there.
Yes, yes.
Like you see the imperfections of like the roofs and the air shafts and stuff like that. And then it sort of just pans across Manhattan. It goes across the park and then it eventually settles on the Dakota.
Right.
Which is the setting, which in the movie is the Bramford.
Right, right.
And that's it. It's super simple, but it's just like the vocals are so haunting.
Yeah.
It looks great. I think – I mean the Dakota is just like my favorite building in New York. It looks great on film.
Yeah.
It's just such a simple but like really enticing opening to that movie.
Well, a theme with Polanski, and Polanski is another director.
Problematic.
He's another problematic guy.
With a capital P.
No, he's a shitty guy. But he had a theme in a lot of those early movies of like – like, he did something called The Apartment, which was, like, it was almost like being in an apartment was surreal. Like, the idea of apartment living and living
like
on top of
each
other.
Like, the horrors of living on top of each other. Isn't it, like, there's, like, an – Rosemary's Baby is, like, one of, like, an unofficial trilogy with Suspiria, right? And
– no, Suspiria is not him, though.
What's him?
The Apartment. I don't know what the third one would be.
The Apartment's, like, Jack
Lemmon. Oh, no. The Tenant.
The Tenant.
I don't know what the third one
was. I feel like there's a third one where it's like it's all about like the horrors of urban living. And I think they're all Polanski.
Yeah, but I don't remember what the third one is.
Look, get on Google. Get to a Googling.
All right. Polanski.
your search history is really upsetting.
Trilogy. The Apartment Trilogy is what it's called. Or the Unholy Trinity. Repulsion, Rosemary's Baby, and the Tenant.
Repulsion, which is serious. Yeah.
Which is... if you saw that movie, Last Night in Soho or something like that, it's a lot like Repulsion. Hmm. It's sort of like in a haunted apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, that's one way to read it. Yeah, it sets up just the sort of lullaby of it is like there's something pretty here, but also something sinister.
Right.
Underneath the surface. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And something very delicate, too. Mm-hmm.
And sad. It's like a...
Yeah.
To hear a downbeat melody,
yeah,
like a downbeat lullaby, is jarring.
By the way, I completely forgot that this movie was produced by William Castle. I was just talking about him a couple weeks ago with Vin, because he was famous for doing, like, the Haunting of Hill House and 13 Ghosts and, like, The Tingler, and he was, like...
The 13 Ghosts, Scooby-Doo and the 13 Ghosts?
Yeah, not the Scooby-Doo one. He was famous for, like, cheap horror movies where he would, like, do gimmicks in the theater. So it's so weird that he's the producer of this. Hmm. If you ever saw, what do you call it? What was the I'm such an old man. This is just the podcast of me going, what is the thing with the thing? What was the show with Bette Davis and Joan Crawford?
Feud. Feud. The first season of Feud.
If you saw that, William Castle was played by John Waters.
Oh, that's fun.
Which is, he didn't look like him at all, but it's perfect casting.
That's fun.
Anyway, no, that's a really good one. And a very simple one. Mm. Let's say Halloween from 1978.
Great.
First of all, just it begins with the bum, 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 bum. So right away, you're like, you're pulled into it. Mm. And you've got black. It's so simple. Black background, orange text because it's the Halloween color. Mm-hmm. And a
jack-o'-lantern.
And in future sequels and stuff, they do weird shit with the jack-o'-lantern. Mm-hmm. This one, it's just zooming in on it. Mm-hmm. It's just there. It's so simple, but so perfect. Mm-hmm. It's such a vibe. And something about the beginning with that music is just like, oh, here we go. We're in it. Something horrible is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not much else to say about it.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's so iconic.
Yes.
They've riffed on it in so many of the sequels. Yeah. I mean, the second one does it again, but then it opens and like a skull comes out. And then in the new ones with the recent trilogy, it's Halloween 2018 or whatever it is. It's the rotted pumpkin that it reinflates.
Yeah.
And then Halloween Kills, it's like multiple pumpkins.
One keeps coming out of
the other. No, that's the third one.
Oh, that's the third one.
Because that's like the theme of that movie is like there'll be another Michael Myers. That movie's the worst
piece
of
shit. Did you see it?
Yes. It is unwatchable. It's such a bad movie.
Yeah.
No, but it's great. So great.
Yeah. It's so a couple years ago on Halloween night, Alamo Drafthouse was showing it and me and Jen went and it was just such a good, fun, cozy, beautiful time. It was so – I had never seen it on a screen that big. I mean, I had shown it in film classes. But film classes, like, those screening rooms are not huge. Mm-hmm. They're not, like, movie theater big.
No.
And it was just – it was just cool to see it in the theater on Halloween night.
I had the same experience, but, like, 20 years ago.
Okay.
It was playing – but it was, like, a Fathom Events.
Oh, okay.
At, like, the regular, like, Regal. And it was on Halloween night, and I went with a couple of friends, and we saw it.
It's Gourley and Russ talk about this on their podcast, but there's something so interesting about horror that's cozy. Because you think
cozy murder mystery is like a whole thing.
Right. It's so weird. I think cozy – I don't know. We did an old episode of this podcast on cozy media, but
I think part of the coziness, especially with mystery, even if it's about a murder, you know it's all going to be solved in like –
yeah.
The good guys are going to prevail.
Order will be restored.
And it'll all be like tied up with a nice, neat little bow. And the aesthetics will be very charming. And
I think with Halloween, like we were just talking in the last episode, how fall is my favorite season. And I don't like summer. I'm not a summer person. The fall of this movie is like the fall you want to live in. Without the killers.
Or like you're walking down the street and there's leaves falling on you. And like,
yeah, and yeah. And like the whole street, like when she's across the street and then he, like it just, the feel, it's just such a good.
It feels so suburban.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Halloween. What's your next one?
My next one is Bridget Jones's Diary.
This was one that I've never seen and I've never seen this
film.
What'd
you think of it?
Liked it. It tells you right away she's dealing with a breakup.
Yes. Love that it starts with she's watching Frasier.
Yes, that's funny.
So I I always loved this. I love this movie very, very much.
Okay.
But I recently went to see this movie live for the Tribeca Film Festival.
What do you mean by live? No.
Saw it in a theater.
Yeah.
In Tribeca.
Yeah.
And Renee Zellweger and the director came out at the end and were interviewed. It was on stage.
Oh, okay.
She's so Texas.
Really?
She has such a thick Texas accent. Really? It's crazy in real life. But so I saw this, not even just saw it, like I saw it in a packed theater in the city of people who just loved it.
Love it, right.
And it was one of the greatest movie-going experiences. Wow. Everybody reacted, everybody laughed when they were supposed to laugh. And when the thing about it is she's like by herself, she's drunk, and she's singing All By Myself.
All by myself.
And it builds.
Yeah.
And then you earn the title card.
Yes.
And when I saw it in the theater, when the title card came up, the theater erupted in applause. It was so great.
It's I think something we're hitting upon with a lot of this is beautiful simplicity.
Yes.
It's almost like a condensed idea of the overall thing.
Right. And this is, like I said before, it's either character, plot, or setting is established. And I think this one just fully establishes.
It's all kind of all three.
All, but especially her character.
Right, because she's sad. When she starts singing it, you realize she's fun too.
Yeah. And then I love that all the credits go.
Yeah.
And then it comes to the big, don't wanna be. Kicks and then the credit, the title card comes up. I love when a title card is really earned.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I like that too. I've never seen this film.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's a little outdated. There are a couple points or there are a couple jokes. I mean, the running joke that she's fat.
Yeah.
They actually asked her about that and she gave a very disappointing response. That my friend and I were both like, "Ooh, she really whiffed that one."
Why? What did she say?
So it was her and the director in conversation with this guy, and he was like, "You know, it's 2026. This movie was the 25th anniversary, so that's why she was there. This movie's 25 years old. In some ways, it's timeless, but in other ways, it's kind of dated. Like, what do you think about the fact that Bridget is supposed to be fat?"
Yeah,
and basically, Renee Zellweger's answer was like, "Well, you know, she's beautiful at any size," instead of being like, "She's not fat."
Yeah.
Which is the answer everybody wanted. Yeah. And then she's like, "I mean, that's her body." And then she's like, "I mean, it's not my body." And then she's like, "Because I'm a runner, you know?" So she was like, my friend Jess and I looked at each other like, "Oh God, she's whiffing this. This is horrible." Because she was like saying the wrong things and being like, "I'm not fat. I'm really thin."
It seems like she's misinterpreting the question too. Yeah,
yes. Because everybody wanted her to be like, "I know, it's crazy. She's not fat."
She's not fat. Right. Right.
Which crazy, even if she were fat pig, that's fine. But she's not. Just like in Devil Wears Prada, Anne Hathaway's not fat. Right.
What the worst is Eat, Pray, Love.
Julie Roberts.
Julie Roberts is like, "Oh, I'm so fat. I'm eating so much pizza." And it's like, no. Yeah. Opening up the first button on your jeans, your skinny jeans, does not make you fat.
Yeah.
You're, in fact, the hottest person ever.
Or in
Stop It.
In Grease, when Jan is the fat one.
Yeah.
She's objectively tinier than every other girl.
Yeah, it's. There's another new Carrie coming out, and she's still not fat. She's supposed to be fat. And
they just won't do it. They won't commit.
And also, this actress is very attractive. And it's another attractive Carrie. Didn't you learn
from the 2013 Chloe Grace Moretz? I watched – we were talking about how Carrie has an interesting opening sequence. So I watched that today, the 76 Carrie. And then there was a link to the opening scene from the 2013 Carrie. And I watched it for 2 seconds and I was laughing because I was like, the Chris Hargensen character looks like a twin of Chloe Grace Moretz. They're both hot blonde girls. It's in what world would she be the bullied girl?
Right. Every guy would be like, "Hi, do you want to go to the prom with me? Because you're the hottest girl ever."
Yeah, it's so stupid. And why are they making another Carrie?
This one I think is a series, and it's Mike Flanagan who's he's the DiGiorno guy for doing King adaptation.
They tried to do that in 2003. Remember, they made a TV movie where she lives at the end.
That was a backdoor pilot.
That was a backdoor pilot. And then they were like, yeah, no, we're not making this show.
That was a weird one because she lived at the end and also she would black out when she hurt people.
Yeah, so she was innocent. Yeah.
So she was innocent. Yeah. When movies do shit like that.
But yeah, in the book, she's fat. And in the Broadway show, she was fat.
I don't remember. Oh, the original Broadway show.
The one, yeah.
You and I saw a revival.
A revival. But the original Broadway show, she was fat.
Yeah. Anyways, am I up? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just did Halloween. Now let's do Psycho.
What a banger.
So this is also extremely simple. This is,
I'm assuming you're talking about the Gus Van Sant.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Cause it needs to be in color.
The real version. So no, the real Psycho from 1960, the credits are designed by Saul Bass, who I looked him up today. He did the AT&T logo. That's why I sent it to you. He did a lot of things. He did logos. He did title sequences. He was a graphic designer.
Lines, parallel lines.
But the lines, so there's a lot of string in the Bernard Herrmann.
It's so from the, just from the beginning, you're like, oh, this is exciting.
Right. Well, it's another one that's like, you're about to see something horrible. Yeah. Like this is something urgent.
Yeah.
Like they talk about how like, you know, like it begins with the date and time as if like it's a crime you're about, you know. But so there's a lot of strings in the score by Bernard Herrmann. So it's almost like it's visualizing the strings.
Yeah.
Dun, dun,
and they like dance across the screen.
Yeah.
And they intercut with the literal credits.
Right. And both.
And I love that the title card like. It like
and then, Hitchcock's credit also does that, as if to say like he's a psycho or you can't trust this director because he's going to show you something
so terrible. Good. The Gus Van Sant version, he does it again, but he made the lines green.
Yeah,
yeah, and, I don't know. It's so good, but you know what's so funny? I've always thought that the Psycho opening is just a fucking one of the greatest openings. I didn't put it on my list because I had a feeling you were going to put it on yours. But when I was doing my research, a lot of people put Vertigo's credits on list. And the Vertigo does have good opening credits.
I can't remember it, though.
Oh, it's the...
You know what I almost put on mine, though? Rear Window. Because that begins with almost like a stage play... showing you the vista of the backyard that he looks at through the whole thing. Yeah. And it also like, first you can't see and then the blinds come up. Yeah. So it's almost like, it's such a voyeuristic movie and it's you as the viewer are now going to peep into these people's lives.
He's got some great opening credits.
Yeah, that Alvin Hitchcock's a good filmmaker, I'll say it.
You know what? It's about time somebody said
I'm not afraid to say it.
I think I'm done. I'm on my last one. I have a bunch of honorable mentions.
Give me all those honorable mentions.
I got even more that I added after. I got Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
This almost made my list, but it's technically not credits.
No, it's not.
It's a cold open with a title card.
It's also a recap of the first movie.
But just I'm talking about just the beginning up to the title card.
Oh, when you see the Sea of Blood.
The Book of the Dead. Yeah, it explains the Book of the Dead. The Sea of Blood. It was this blood that inked the book. And then it's just Evil Dead 2 with the smoke. No,
the new one could have used that. Yeah.
The music is so good. I got First Wives Club, which is another animated opening.
Great one. That one, it kind of looks like newspaper comic.
Yeah, and it's got that 60s song by Dionne Warwick, the Hey Little Girl.
Right, yes.
About like pleasing your husband.
Yeah.
I got the Sex and the City movie because I think it did a great job recapping the series.
I totally forgot that one.
Did you watch it?
Yes, and it recaps the series and also along with showing things you see next to it like a chapter heading as if like these are all things she wrote.
Right.
It actually does a really good job.
It does. I got Singing in the Rain.
Of course.
Iconic.
Them dancing with the rain slickers on.
Yep. I got two more. I got Adventures in Babysitting.
I forget what that one is.
Oh, it's Elizabeth Shue dancing.
Oh, she's like singing in her bedroom? With the,
and then he kissed me.
Right.
It's just her just getting ready for her date with Bradley Whitford. I just love that she's got a framed picture of Bradley Whitford and she kisses it.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I know. What a stud. And Elizabeth, she was just so charming. And then I also got the Legally Blonde opening credits are great too.
I don't remember this.
It's her. She's just like getting ready. She's like brushing her hair.
Oh, yeah.
She's doing her nails. But you don't see
Perfect
her face.
Day?
Perfect Day is playing, which is a great song. Yeah. And then you see like all the other sorority sisters like getting the card ready to give her.
Right.
And then you don't see her face until the end.
Right.
And it's Reese. Right. So those are all my, but I had so many others that I thought of.
Fantastic.
There are a lot of good ones. And then my number one is Grease.
Hey, another animated one.
Yeah, I love an animated open. Great. Ugh. They do Stalker Channing so dirty.
Well, yeah, that's the meme. That's the meme from this.
It's a meme, but like I've thought that my entire life. Like, wow.
Well, they all kind of look
ugly. She's an attractive
ugly.
Woman, and wow, she looks really ugly.
Oh, yeah, they do her so dirty. And what's interesting is like there's a different animation style that doesn't look as bad, but then they do the close-up in the mirror, and it's like, whoa.
Oh, yeah. Because like John Travolta's kind of looks just like a little bit exaggerated.
Yeah.
Olivia Newton-John comes out looking like a rose in hers. And then
they do a funny thing. Like, they make her like Snow White.
Yeah.
Like, she can't, like, deers are coming in, and things are landing on her. And she looks like beautiful.
I think, so a lot of things work in that. The animation is great. Also, just like similar to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, introducing that this is going to have like a, it's nostalgic, but it's also like heightened and stylized.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So this isn't like the real 50s. It's like a pastiche 50s.
But the things you see almost like collage like.
Yeah. Like you see
ads and stuff.
I Love Lucy. You see I Like Ike.
Yeah.
You see like all 50s artifacts.
Coke things.
Coca-Cola. Yeah. And then also, I think the song is great.
Incredible. And it begins with the radio.
Yeah, it's a there's something you said for a really great smash cut between an cold open and opening credits. And it's so great because it comes right after the it's only the beginning, and then it goes right into the so good.
It explains the title.
Uh huh.
By having the
grease come out of the tube.
Grease come out of
the hair
tube,
grease,
and then him putting his hair, and he's like all like hairy, and then you see him like. Turns into himself.
It's so strong, so well done. You can see why, because that song was written for the film.
Right.
You could see why in subsequent productions they put that song
in. I think it's my favorite song in the.
But it's really, it's a 70s style song, which is why it doesn't quite fit.
Well, it's written by the Bee Gees, but it's
sung by Frankie Valli.
So
yeah.
To make it sound.
But it's like a disco song, really.
And then you see them, like, animation of them in the cars, like, cruising around. And that's and then they you see on, like, billboards the supporting characters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's perfect. I've always loved it my whole life.
They drive by a movie theater that show. It says Debbie Reynolds and Tammy.
It's just fun. It's like, you're about to have so much fun.
Yeah. Don't take it so seriously.
We're going to have fun. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Don't be a slob. Yeah, like,
So go to class. You can pass.
Yeah. Yeah, that is such a great song.
Oh, so good. So good.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. It tells you the kind of 50s that it's going to be.
I like my 50s live. The crazed guy from the Broadway commercial.
Oh, yeah.
With Sharon Stone as his date.
Yeah, yeah.
What a fucking bonkers commercial that is.
Oh, yeah. You went on a deep dive recently of
Broadway commercials.
Because if you grew up in New York, you saw local Broadway commercials, which were just – well, the Cats one is seared into my memory like nothing
else. Oh, my God, yeah. Cats at the Winter Garden Theater. Yeah.
It made it like it was a secret.
Yeah.
Cats. An experience you won't remember.
But this one, it was 50s.
Yeah.
It was Grease, the Broadway show, and it was like 1980, 81, so it was like the movie had already come out, and they're advertising the play.
Continued, or was it a revival?
No, it was continued. At one time, Grease was the longest running Broadway show, because it went from like 75 to like 85 or something. And I think that's why he says, I like my 50s live, because it's like you come see it live instead of the movie.
Right.
But it's like this guy's like, it's like tells this whole story of this guy who's dating this girl, and he's taking her to see Grease 8 times.
Hey, man, whatever works.
And
I guess
gets up and screams, I like my 50s live in the middle of the theater.
And everyone's like, please don't.
He's like, I like my 50s live, babe. We're not going anywhere else. But
don't you ever, don't even fucking suggest renting the movie. Fuck that movie and fuck you for liking it. that's hilarious.
So good.
So let me do some of my honorable mentions. I could talk about these all day, too. Batman from 1989.
Great.
You hear
great the music.
You hear the Batman theme by Danny Elfman.
It's so good.
And dun 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 dun. And you see like It looks like you're like going through a cave or something. You just see like landscape.
I love that it evokes the sense of the Batcave.
Yes.
But then it's the logo.
Right. Then eventually, yeah. And you don't know it at first though. Right. Eventually it zooms out and you realize it's been like a granite version symbol. Of the Batman symbol.
Yeah.
And you were just going through the curves of it.
So cool.
So good.
I want to like blast that song, like drive really fast.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Another superhero, Deadpool. The first Deadpool movie I still contend is an incredible movie.
It is.
If you don't remember, it was like slow motion. It was you were in media res, this big violent scene where he's like in the car killing them. But it's like frozen in time and then like slow motion like zooming around them. And all the credits are fake. Like it's like starring some God's perfect asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
A hot chick. Problematic. a moody teenager. It's writers, the real heroes here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so, and it's that song, Angel in the Morning. Just call me Angel. So it's so like ironic compared to the violence you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that's so good. Another one is My Best Friend's Wedding.
Great one. Do you know I've never seen that movie though?
Really?
I feel like it's really up my alley. Like I would really love that movie.
I only saw it like 3 years ago on vacation because we went away and it's one of Jen's like childhood favorites.
It's an interesting choice for the opening credits.
It's such a super meta text because none of the people in it are in it. Mm-hmm. Like these aren't characters in the movie. It's like characters, they're dressed like a bride and bridesmaids.
But it's like 60s.
But it's like 60s style and they're singing hug him and kiss him and squeeze him and love him. And so it's like a 50s song, which is, again, similar to First Wives Club. It was like a big thing, like a nostalgic look at love.
Yeah.
Right? Which this movie is not that, right?
Right.
Or plays with that. And they're just like dancing and singing like a 50s group. And then this movie's not that at all.
Yeah.
But it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And then Beverly Hills Cop. Which is the heat
real
is on.
Slice of life stuff.
Yeah, you can tell it's all real documentary. Yeah. Like it's just they went around and got footage
of Detroit. Yeah.
Of Detroit. Because it seems like real people doing real things. Yeah. Sometimes people looking in the camera. Yeah. There's real little kids hanging around. Whoa. It really gets it gets the feeling of the world that he's in, and then he goes into the world of
my hot take Beverly is Hills. That if there had never been any sequels, Beverly Hills Cop would be like way more of a classic than it is.
I saw it recently again and it's so fucking good. And it's so amazing that it's good because it's one of these movies like The Wizard of Oz where it was so troubled in how it was made. The fact that it's good is like absolutely astonishing.
Right, and it's very good.
I think action comedy written for Sylvester Stallone.
Right.
And then he didn't want to do it. And then they said, okay, let's put Eddie Murphy in it and then let him, I think, help come up with make it funnier, but it's just it works so well.
There's such weird lore about that movie and about Eddie Murphy's a weird guy. Do you know that that's how he really laughed? Like, you know how, if you watch the first one, he does like the, like a kind of goofy laugh. And that was how he really laughed.
Yeah.
And people thought that he did it for the movie. So then he changed his laugh.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Which but is that so was weird.
His, yeah, I know.
That was his real laugh. Yeah.
But that's what people would imitate.
Yeah.
For years when they do impressions of them.
It's a great I think it's great. It's obviously a comedy classic, but I feel like it would be more of like elevated, like a classic if it didn't have the stain of like all the sequels that were not necessary.
Yes, I agree.
I feel the same way about Lethal Weapon.
I agree, yeah. My last honorable mention would be Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. This is it's band practice and they're playing and then they do this effect where like they make the living room, the camera pulls back, but the living room they're in looks like endless, like the living room is extending. And then it goes into the credits and it looks like the filmmaker Stan Brakhage, which he would like actually paint on the film. And it's like things like that. But if you see the movie once, you'll realize that all the little images and stuff around the names have a relationship to the characters. Mm-hmm. So those are my honorable mentions. Let me get to my number one.
I knew this was going to be your number one.
Superman the movie from 1978.
It really is a fucking great opening
sequence. It's incredible. And so it begins with like, you see curtains and then the curtains lift.
Because it's evoking like the old serial, Superman serial.
Right. And you hear a little kid's voice. You see like a comic cover, which isn't actually the cover of the first Superman. But and you hear a little kid's voice, and the kid goes, in the decades of the 1930s, even the great city of Metropolis was not spared the ravages of worldwide depression. And at times of fear and confusion, the job of informing the public was the responsibility of the Daily Planet, a great metropolitan newspaper whose reputation for clarity and truth had become a symbol of hope for the city of Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And then it zooms into the Daily Planet, which has, you know, the
but it's on like a aspect ratio of like a, it's like the old square. Right. Like,
and black and white.
Yeah.
And the Daily Planet has always had like the planet on top of the building.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's actually the Post. Oh, no, it's the Daily News building. It was a real newspaper building. But then it sort of zooms past that. We go up to the stars. Then you hear the dun dun dun.
That's always the best part.
Right, the words are coming at you, but like you hear them coming at you.
The best is the dun 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 dun.
And then the symbol comes, and it's so great.
It's so good.
It gets you hyped.
And then it was
like, you know, it was at this point, even though it's the 70s, this was like going back to the fucking 30s. So it was like, this is a movie of this classic thing.
It was like
a big deal.
Superman was like the first like superhero movie in a long time, right?
Like, yeah, there had been serials and stuff, but this was the first one like this. And it was originally written jokey to almost emulate like what the Batman TV series was. And the director was smart enough to be like, no, let's take it really seriously. And like, well, it's not like it's without humor, but let's not make fun of it. Let's just do it. And it's great. I did an episode of PCMC on it. It's one of my favorite movies. And Superman.
Yeah, it's so good. And then they, Bryan Singer, another very problematic director.
Yeah.
Redid it basically for Superman Returns.
Yeah.
And I also really like that.
Yeah. He does it. He did it in a way where like you really feel like you're zooming through it.
It was fun.
And then the new
movie. It was great on IMAX. Remember we saw it on IMAX? God, that movie doesn't get its due.
Yeah.
Especially now. Well, now. Remember Typical People? When he says the Cola Scola, shouldn't you have drowned in Bryan Singer's pool by now? Did you see they're doing a Difficult People, the movie, live reading?
No.
I would go, but it's on election day. It's I think they wrote a screenplay for a movie, and it's being live read with the people. And you can buy tickets for it.
Now, that's amazing. I love Difficult People. Well, the first season. The new Superman movie, the James Gunn one, which I loved, it doesn't do that, but the title Superman does that.
Oh, that's
so funny. That movie really is expert in what it homages and what it reinvents. And
was that successful?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So now the new Supergirl is not being successful, but I loved it.
It's a woman.
That's the thing, man. People are so sexist.
They really are. It's fucking.
You put a woman in a movie and they're like, "Fuck you, I hate it. She's not hot enough."
It's so crazy.
Even like underage girls in movies, people are like, that kid's not, I don't want to fuck that kid.
It's horrible.
Like, what?
God, straight men are the fuck worst.
Yeah, they are scary. Do you ever hear the Bechdel cast when they did an episode on The Little Mermaid, and they're talking about how a lot of the contemporary newspaper reviews for The Little Mermaid or male reviews just talk about how hot The Little Mermaid is?
Yeah.
And I remember Jamie Loftus was like, because straight men are scary.
Menacing. Yeah, no, I kind of knew Supergirl was going to bomb.
I fucking loved it.
I'm sure it was great. I knew it was not going to be successful because of that reason.
Yeah, and there's still the fucking Zack Snyder people who like, they're like, I've decided to hate anything that he doesn't do. If it's DC and it's not Zack Snyder, I'm mad at it forever.
Wasn't his Superman shitty?
Some people love it. I fucking hated it.
That's Man of Steel, right?
Yeah.
That's like, hey, let's do Superman, but drain it of all the fun and color.
Yeah. You know how like Superman took the idea of an alien invader and twisted it on its head and made him like a good guy? What if we go do the original? What if we take away the twist? Let's do the worse idea. Like, you know how they reinvented? Let's uninvent the reinvention.
Why? How do they do that?
Because they just make him alien. And it's like, well, what's the fucking point? This isn't Superman. I can't do this again. This has been PCMC. Anthony, any more you got in your head?
I'm going to think of a bunch.
When looking them up, I saw a lot of James Bond. I'm not a James Bond fan, but I know James Bond. I know Janine and Bill and their children are big James Bond fans.
Yes, they are.
So that might be a good one.
Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion has a really fun one with I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt
playing over it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's got a really impressive shot it's in Miami. It starts over the ocean and then it goes into their window. Yeah. And then they're watching a movie.
Yeah.
You see them watching Pretty Woman.
What you just said reminds me of the Birdcage credits.
Oh, my God. Those are so good.
Which is really good because you go over like a fucking body of water into the nightclub, into the performer on stage.
Well, then also The Shining.
Yes, which is so menacing. And the credits are coming the wrong way.
Which makes it feel...
Which makes your brain go, no, it's wrong.
Yeah.
And it's got the death and march of... Bum, 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 bum. Mm. Like from the get-go, it's like, oh, I'm about to watch a tragedy.
Carrie, we mentioned. The 76 yes. Carrie, which is just a bunch of naked teenage girls.
Yes, yeah.
But a great score.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's...
And there's I mentioned before, it's an art form a TV to itself. Version where they're all clothed. So they shot it twice.
Yeah, that was a thing they used to do.
Yeah.
They used to shoot things they also multiple used to ways.
Remember they used to shoot extra scenes because they knew things would get cut.
Yeah.
Like Halloween has that extra...
Yeah, they shot extra shit when they were doing part two. So
to make it connected.
He writes sister on the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll think of a bunch more tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure I will too.
Anthony, thank you so much for being here. You are a fan favorite.
Thank you.
By some of our listeners.
I love you all.
And they love you. This has been PCMC. We come out every single Wednesday at 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yes.
I feel like I don't get it in my feed sometimes until the afternoon.
Well, I don't know. I really? Where do you get it from?
Apple.
It's always on mine by then.
I don't know.
I check where it comes out. I check Spotify. I check YouTube.
I feel like I always get the podcast notifications all at once. Like they all come through at once.
Well, that's you. You're going to have to talk to your local genius.
I will have to.
This has been PCMC. We end the episode by saying,
go bye-bye.